Arm's Length Reporting for investors who want the whole story. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome into the KER Politics. Welcoming back our radio audience. Great to have you with us. I just want to remind you, we do have a very active blog. We have about 100 comments a day. Love to have you guys take part in this if you are interested and have time. And I would think that you wouldn't be listening to the show if you weren't interested and you didn't have time. Jimmy, we got a one-year anniversary right now of Ukraine. What are your comments on that? Where are we headed as far as that country and Russia are concerned?
Well, of course, no one knows what's going to happen right now. That's a lot of ambiguity. We do know that a couple of things have happened in the last few weeks and, of course, in the last 2 days.
Yeah.
I do want to just highlight right now at the beginning of the show that we're going to talk a little bit about Ukraine in this segment, talk about the WHO and the Biden administration handing responsibilities over to them for pandemic response, talk a little bit about politics with election fraud in Arizona and maybe some of the other complex details, and then the last segment will be political, overall what we see happening around the political realm. But this, when you get back to the specifics on Ukraine right now, what we've seen happen in the last week, you saw Putin come out and give his somewhat anniversary speech in kind of a rally moment, getting a lot of people together in Russia, in Moscow, in the main stadium to rally support for the troops and for his special military operation.
Now, I understand, Jimmy, that wasn't actually a voluntary attendance at that. There was kind of an edict given. You folks had to go, right?
Well, so what I heard, so I actually listened to some of social media reporting in Russian
right.
in the area, and there were some interviews with people that said that they were let off work to go, that they were incentivized. Some people were incentivized with basically 50 rubles, not a lot of money, but, incentivized to go for that, that there was some companies that forced their employees to go.
Yeah.
So it's hard to judge. You know, some of this is anecdotal. There's a lot of propaganda in all directions, but clearly there are problems and a large number of casualties, and Russia is admitting it more and more that there's a large number of casualties. In fact, Putin was trying to honor a lot of the lost soldiers at this point, trying to use the same, basic premise that he talked about before, Nazification in Ukraine, NATO expansion and the threat from the West, and this was really the West's fault, which, resonates to some. Others, it doesn't make a lot of sense to, certainly the Ukrainians that were attacked.
Yeah.
But we also have the Chinese stepping forward, Xi offering a 12-point peace plan. That peace plan is the first real peace plan that you've seen from a major participant in this.
I just want to say one thing, Jimmy. In the past, that peace plan would have come from the U.S., but with our great president, it's not happening.
It's amazing to me that there's no strategic policy statements coming out on the end of this and what end state there is. So the Chinese have a little bit of advantage here, although when you look at the details of their plan, it summarized Russians keep their forces where they are, and then the West withdraws sanctions, and then we continue on and accept it to stop the violence.
Yeah.
That's not flying very well EU capitals, NATO capitals, or certainly with the Biden administration. So
yeah.
big challenges there. But again, the Chinese are trying to take advantage of the opportunity to be publicly out front. The other thing that happened just yesterday was on the anniversary of the invasion, the United Nations voted in a General Assembly vote, 141 votes for a resolution that basically tells Russia needs to withdraw all its military forces from sovereign Ukrainian territory that recognized Ukrainian territory.
Yeah.
There were seven votes against it. Those seven votes included Russia, Belarus, North Korea, Syria, Mali, Eritrea, and Nicaragua. Not the greatest group of people to be hanging around with.
No.
And then there were 32 abstentions from that vote. One of them was China. One of them was India. A number of them were African countries that are actually now very close to China because of influence and peddling and buying. And a number of the Eastern or Central Asian countries, I'm sorry, that were that are basically under the influence of Russia, and of course Cuba stepped out with an abstention on it as well. So again, not a large group of people, a large group of countries that were basically against this.
Jimmy, let's talk a little bit about the European countries. How did they vote?
Yeah, across the board, all the European countries voted for the withdrawal. I mean, the Europeans, the EU, and the NATO countries, they're all very concerned about this continued conflict.
Yeah.
And of course, and most of the world is. This is a very deadly, dangerous, it's a massive operation and very difficult to understand for many, many people because it's so complex. But the bottom line is, over the last week or so, it looks like Russian military forces have been attempting to, again, move on an offensive near Bakhmut. They have not taken Bakhmut. They have moved in Vuhledar and other areas in the east in the Donbass region. But apparently they're taking heavy casualties and gained very little ground, with the exception of a couple little hamlets and small bulges in the conflict zone. In the meantime, the Ukrainians are suffering significant casualties as well. They are running low on ammunition. However, Western NATO countries, including the United States, continue to pour resources, equipment, training, and ammunition into the region. And we haven't even seen the effects of main battle tanks, more sophisticated Western main battle tanks, and we haven't seen the long-range weapon systems that the Ukrainians have asked for that would might actually have a significant impact on the outcome of this conflict.
Well, Jimmy, the tank issue was all over the news, whether it's televised or whether it's print or what have you. There was a lot of coverage on that just about a week ago, and you say nothing's really going on in that area. Is that correct?
Well, they're preparing. They're training the German Leopard tanks. There's some of them are beginning to come close. Of course, the Polish Leopard tanks are very close. The U.S. M1 tanks, that'll be a while. The Bradleys, however, are beginning to get close to being implemented in theater. And, of course, we gave a large number of M113 armored personnel carriers, and you can see those on the battlefield now quite often.
Yeah.
So as you see heavier armor coming in and you see more sophisticated anti-tank weapons on that armor, and that includes the TOW missile systems and some of these other anti-tank systems that will be along with 120 millimeter guns with longer range and better sighting, you're going to see a dynamic change on the ability for Ukrainian maneuver operations that could challenge the Russian forces if they continue to be bogged down, as it appears they are.
Yeah. Well, hopefully this whole thing will be settled just about in time for the tanks not to have to be used. I would really hope that some type of peace plan would be put into place, offered by perhaps one of the European countries, or maybe even China. Let's get some worldwide volume. Let's get this thing going. Jimmy, final words.
Yeah, we've got about a minute left here, and it looks to me like Putin is in a very precarious situation because he cannot lose this. At the same time, it looks very difficult for him to win it. And politically, you may see turmoil in the backside of what's happening in Moscow because of more pressure from the right. The people that are sealing failure on the battlefield are very frustrated with the Ministry of Defense, and ultimately that will come back to Putin's leadership. And then as people become more aware of the casualties and the losses, the Russian army has suffered significantly, and that's a reality that you cannot ignore. That's right. Going to put pressure on Putin and the leadership.
Oh, you can't. There's no question whatsoever about that. 10 seconds to a commercial, Jimmy. So let me just say this. We're going to be right back after the commercial. We're going to talk a little bit about the World Health Organization.
your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back. Segment six of KER Politics. Going to talk in this one about an article that of an occurrence that happened yesterday involving the entire world and the World Health Organization. I have to say, I almost fell out of my chair as I was posting this article on our website. The World Health Organization has come up with a way to ensure that every person living in the entire world is inoculated according to the organization's standards. I can't believe this is going on. Let's talk about unnecessary, in my mind anyway, control. How about in your mind, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. So we know that the World Health Organization under Tedros, he basically sided with the Chinese. The WHO failed to find actually do any research or justification or actually do testing to find out where the COVID vaccine came from.
Right.
They bowed down to the pressures from China. They bowed down to the pressures from pharmaceutical companies. And because of that, and the disinformation that they provided and the failures, the Trump administration back in 2019 to 2020 actually defunded U.S. participation in the WHO because basically they were not benefiting. They were acting as a puppet for the Chinese government and protecting them. So what we see now with the Biden administration is they have been working with the WHO. They restarted the funding to the WHO, and the WHO is now putting together policies that countries would sign on to, and the U.S. is potentially signing on to this, that gives them the authority to control and measure, track every person in the world for vaccination status in case of another pandemic. This is, in my view, it's an unbelievable effort to take over responsibilities, sovereign responsibilities from the U.S. government and take away constitutional rights to define your own health decisions, and being forced by an international organization that's directly related in protecting the Chinese government and directly influenced by pharmaceutical companies to force vaccinations for policies that they see fit. After the COVID-19 debacles, absolutely destroying the economy by shutting down small businesses, by shutting down schools, for basically failed, in my view, failed effects of a vaccines, why would anybody allow this organization to take that much responsibility around the world? I have no idea, and there's no way we should allow it to happen.
Well, Jimmy, don't you find it to be an interesting coincidence that there is a much better than 50% chance that China actually started this COVID problem in the Wuhan laboratory? I think there is, and I find it interesting that the next step that they are supporting is worldwide inoculation, worldwide shots and jabs, etc., etc. I find it interesting that China, mainland China, the CCP, Chinese Communist Party, is actually originating this thing and supporting the World Health Organization 1,000%.
Well, and look, it's using the influence and the power of tracking vaccination status around the world is another method of tracking individuals and, you know, what they're doing, which is a method of control.
Right.
That's absolutely what the Chinese government wants to do with their people. And of course, the technologies that are out there today makes it easy for anyone in the world to do it with, you know, the right support.
Yeah.
So the decisions that would be made on who gets vaccinated, when you get vaccinated, why you get vaccinated, is the vaccine effective? Is one thing. That's all one question. But what else do you do with the information that you track people? Do you tell, oh, you're not vaccinated, you take a flu vaccine, so you can't go to work, or you can't get paid?
Right.
And of course, when you include that with the pushing digital dollars and digital IDs, you have people like Tony Blair in the UK advocating for digital IDs. You can take away anybody's rights at any time because of your political agenda.
Yes, you can.
And
you bet.
That's what's so frightening to me, and why why this administration is pushing it. There's only one reason. They want more control. They want more influence, and they want to take away voices from people that disagree with them.
Well, it's not really coming from the economic powers of the world, which is your typical stars whenever you talk about conspiracy theories. The fact of the matter is, now it's involving just the World Health Organization, an incredibly powerful organization, and the CCP. I think it's a real strange coincidence, Jim.
Well, and you do get people like Bill Gates that are advocating for these types of policies as well. You do get the George Soros that continue to undermine, you know, law enforcement around the world that are involved in some of the organizations to push these agendas. There are people, very powerful, very influential people, that are seeking this type of control, as well as the tech companies that want more data on you.
Yeah.
You becoming a digital slave. And of course, with this type, the administration signing on to an agreement that gives the WHO the lead over a pandemic response, takes away U.S. sovereignty, and it takes away the citizens' rights to question, and what we've seen absolutely with this last pandemic, and the silencing of and the censoring of individuals by the U.S. government.
Yeah.
Is a very frightening scenario. Giving more responsibility to bigger powers will not help us solve anything. It will actually create many, many problems for many people. And I just don't see how this would. The people that are the poorest, that they wouldn't have the systems, you know, when you talk about, you know, tribal entities in Africa and some of these remote places, they're not going to have this type of surveillance. This is not what it's about. It's only in sophisticated countries, people that can potentially question and challenge the power of tech companies and the power of oligarchs, the power of Chinese communists, as well as globalists that want to determine the future for all humanity.
Well, it's what it is in my mind is it's regulations that are dictating where automobiles, i.e. steering wheels, are going to take cars. You won't be able to make a left turn if you want to. Your actions are going to be totally monitored by the people monitoring the steering wheels. Got it?
Yeah, exactly. And do you trust them anymore? You know, after what's happened, do you trust Anthony Fauci?
Anymore, Jimmy. I don't trust them anymore.
I don't either. I mean, do we trust, you know, Joe Biden for his, you know, and phenomenal decision-making capabilities?
No,
I don't think so.
Not.
You know, we're facing dilemmas around the world right now. The economic policies that were put in place, the draconian shutdowns and the lockdowns, the forced vaccinations or you lose your job for the federal government or a company over 100 people. This is insanity, and it continues to go on. And why people sit around and allow that to go, I have no idea anymore.
I have no idea either. I mean, look what the last shutdown did. Lockdown, I guess, is a better way to put it. Look what it did to the United States in terms of our business climate. Look what it did in terms of our educational system. In neither case was it positive. You guys got to go for the top of the hour news, and we're going to be right back.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment. Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, welcome back to the second half of KER Politics. We're going to talk about what's going on in Arizona, the Kerry Lake issue. There's something wrong, I would have to say, with the voter system in the United States right now. Jimmy, you want to talk about that?
Yeah, so there's so much information about problems in Maricopa County and the Arizona election. And of course, Kerry Lake and her campaign, as well as others, have been filing suit. However, they haven't gone very far. In fact, most of them so far have been dismissed, or at least they'd lost, but they are pushing it forward. Kerry Lake is pushing it forward. They're going to go to try and get it to the U.S. Supreme Court. But let's go through some of the real problems with the election there that we know happened. So So from the beginning, inside the election commission and the different vote, you know, the people that are responsible for votes in Maricopa County, there were maps that showed, heat maps that showed the density of Republican conservative voters. And of course, they say, oh, they were just incidentally there. They were just wall candy. But the problem becomes on election day, where the majority of conservatives go to vote because they don't trust the mail-in system, these areas that were high-density Republican areas, the machines did not work in counting votes. The reason why they didn't work in counting votes is because somebody changed printer settings. The ballot pages were printed on 20-inch paper when, in fact, the ballots were supposed to be on 19-inch ballots, so they weren't allowed into the system. That's a huge problem. And it made it hours-long wait for people that were willing to wait, but it excluded a large number of people that didn't have time to wait because of either work or they were moving from one place to another or you know, whatever, they're babysitting their children, whatever. There was a lot of reasons why people couldn't wait hours and hours in line. And then they were told to fold their ballots and put them into another box if, in fact, they weren't read by the voting tabulating machines. Now, that alienated a large number, potentially 250,000 voters.
That's a lot of folks.
It is. And, okay, of course, what then was supposed to happen was a very strict chain of custody to track those ballots. Then they were supposed to be scanned, actually printed on the proper page, and then accounted for, and then counted as a ballot. The problem is, there's no chain of custody documentation. The entire organization forgot to do that or failed to do it effectively. Now, there are hundreds, literally hundreds of depositions on the threat of perjury if somebody lied about it, saying that these were problems. The courts in Arizona have ignored them and moved past. There was a significant problem with the way that they were supposed to count these types of ballots. They couldn't track them. Then if, in fact, there was signature validation, there's supposed to be automated signature validation, according to the process, according to the lawsuits, they were going way too fast for signature validation, and a large number of them did not match. And so that made, a very big, significant problem for effectively tabulating people's votes.
Yeah.
That's what the argument with Kerry Lake is, hey, they dropped their procedures. And when they dropped their procedures, it did not come out with a fair outcome. And, of course, when you have these specific areas that were highly, dense Republican areas that were not effectively counted, you've got a tremendous amount of frustration with the voter population. You get a tremendous amount of frustration with the campaigns. And, of course, the courts are scared to death to open up the possibility of corruption, because if they do, the entire system may crumble.
The entire American system would crumble.
Right. And then all of a sudden it opens up the possibility that, in fact, in 2020, maybe there was fraud in the 2020
right.
election, starting with the count in Arizona, which Fox News called early before Pennsylvania, Georgia, and other areas were called. You might actually show and prove that, in fact, the entire system is corrupted.
Right.
And that's what obviously many people are afraid to do that. There is no judge right now at this point that's been willing to stand up and say, hey, these facts have to be evaluated and we have to relook the election. And of course, the media is trying to hoodwink the entire population. The mainstream corporate media is saying, oh, nothing to see here. These are all discounted arguments. Well,
yeah.
They aren't. These are factual problems that need to be addressed.
Yeah, I agree 1,000%. The Democrats are starting to throw rocks, obviously, at the Republicans. They're saying the R's, because they lost these particular elections, are just, it's just kind of sour milk or sour grapes, for lack of better terms. And the Republicans are standing fast and saying, no, you're wrong about that. So it would be very, very interesting. Someday history will determine who was right and who was wrong. But I don't think it's going to happen in contemporary times, Jim.
I think there are enough people in the United States right now that really lack faith in our administration.
Yeah,
and you know, there's a really low number of people that support Joe Biden.
Yeah.
You know, for most of the polling, and of course the mistakes continue to compound each other. You know, with the administration's decision making processes, they're having to come back and make some decisions, like on the border. They just kind of reinstated, basically summarized Trump policy of, you know, you can't come in for asylum unless if you go through another country. These policies may or may not have have an effect on the election in 2024, but what they're trying to do is steer away from things that they've ignored over the last 2 years that public have actually supported, which is better sovereignty, better security, better crime, control of the border. You're starting to see the Biden administration somewhat, I won't say pivot, but move towards some of these problems that they've actually created because of their policies. The problem is most people don't trust the administration. They certainly don't trust anybody at this point. And when you don't have an effective election system, when you don't have a trustworthy vote, then you're going to have problems. And I do believe there are enough people in America that still have their eyes open, and more are waking up to this problem, that over time we're going to have some changes that may turn us away from the brink of collapse and disaster.
Yeah, I don't know. It's getting to be pretty tense as far as I'm concerned, Jimmy. Very tense.
There is a tremendous amount of frustration out there in society. There's a tremendous amount. You're seeing it all the time in areas of crime.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing the political posturing, and I got to agree with some of the people that actually comment on our blog that there is a lot of, you know, fake news, a lot of fraud, a lot of different information that's out there from a lot of different sources that does undermine credibility across the board and trust and faith in anything. And it's hard to sift through that. It's hard to figure out.
Yeah.
It's hard to figure out what's right and wrong unless you spend a tremendous amount of time. And even then, you're not going to get it all right, you know. But the problem is, if you don't do anything about it, if you just sit back and complain about it, nothing changes, and we will just continue to, you know, collapse.
Well, I think the United States right now, I think it'd be fairly easy to build a very compelling argument that America is kind of in a downward spiral right now. I just have to say that I'm hoping, being a big supporter of America, I'm really hoping that this will basically terminate itself sooner rather than later, perhaps by maybe another political party taking over or what have you, or if not that, at least having people who are a little bit more credible running the country. And that's something that I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but I hope that it does. You guys stick around. We're going to be right back to wrap up KER Politics. Welcome back here to wrap up KER Politics. You know, we've had a plethora of very important events this week in the political sector. Certainly the one-year anniversary of the situation in the Ukraine is very important. My hot button right now is really for the action that the World Health Organization is attempting to take. Boy, talk about major controlling the population with some of their ideas. It's just, I just don't understand. I do understand, but I find it to be very, very interesting that China, potentially the instigator of COVID, now is behind the idea 1,000% of the World Health Organization demanding and being able to investigate people who do not get vaccinated for diseases in the future. Boy, if you really look at where that would take the population in terms of being able to be controlled by a singular organization like World Health, it's just terrifying to me. How do you feel about that, Jimmy?
Well, absolutely. And I also think that you can't trust the pharmaceutical companies,
no.
Right? We what we've seen with the these mRNA vaccines is potentially very damaging, and we have no idea what the long-term effects are going to be. Over and over again, there's been mistakes in the processes to develop vaccines. Yeah. So forcing people in a pandemic, when you're making irrational decisions, very quick decisions on how to address it, only leads to chaos and catastrophe, in my view, and could damage, actually pretty much undermine the stability of the entire world, and certainly undermine the health of each of us and take away our sovereignty. So I am very much against this.
I'm totally against it. As I said, when we were doing a segment on the WHO, I almost fell out of my chair when I was reading that on the internet last night. That is really going one step too far, in my opinion. It is totally taking out the concept of freedom of choice, Jim.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's so many things that are going on now, and it's so important to understand what the political dynamics are and how much control of information is out there. Most people have now been conditioned in America and maybe around the world to be afraid. Yeah. They have been conditioned to fear, and that's because of the media and the hype and fright, you know, all the things that. And the COVID was the perfect example. People were absolutely scared to death. There are still people that go around with masks on today, and some states are encouraging it. And of course, the CDC is encouraging, in spite of the fact that there is massive studies, very large studies, that say they were ineffective. There are significant studies saying that there are tremendous risks with the vaccines for younger people, certainly with males with cardio problems, and potentially with women with menstrual cycles and long-term effects that no one has any idea about because these things aren't tested. This is, you know, it's crazy. And allowing politicians and media to dictate your future and to be able to basically buffalo you and scare you to death it's going to be catastrophic if we continue to allow this to happen. People have to have a little more courage, and they certainly have to start looking at things a lot more critically as we understand how much our leaders have failed us. And we need to look at new leadership, and we really have to get people that understand what America is facing right now in order to keep it intact.
I know that when you're talking about new leadership, Jim, you're primarily focusing on America. I don't think it's just in America. I think it's around the world. I think the CCP is just around the corner from taking major control of the world. I think the Russians are the same way. I find it interesting. Again, I don't want to repeat myself, but it could be absolute genius on the part of the CCP if, in fact, they were the instigators of COVID. It's just interesting as hell to me.
You know what, Al, let me just say that. So they may have been part of it. You know who else was part of it? Anthony Fauci the National Institute of Health funding some of this research in Chinese laboratories, thinking that somehow these were partners in a process to actually better the world, when in fact they were probably partners. These ignorant idiots in the U.S. administration were, probably partners in destroying the world.
Well, how much money did Dr. Fauci, how much money is it rumored that he actually made as a result of his actions? I heard it was like $3 or $4 million.
I have no idea, but I do know he made close to $500,000 as a federal employee, the highest paid federal employee in the government. And I do know that he was doing things to circumvent, using whatever method he could to circumvent oversight in order to achieve what he thought was right. Yeah. And what he thought was right has turned out to be incredibly wrong.
Well, I'll never forget the interview that I did with the producer of the movie, The Real Dr. Fauci. The movie was produced in Utah, and it is available on the internet. You notice it was not in the movie theaters, but you can watch it if you want to. It's very, very worthwhile.
We're seeing a lot of information that's now beginning to come out that was basically censored or restricted a couple of years ago on COVID and what some of these some of the influences these leaders had and some of the influences on them.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you're still seeing censorships and attacks. And we talked earlier this week on our blog about Project Veritas and James O'Keefe getting pushed out after he outed Pfizer for some of their problems and some of the things that they were doing that potentially could be very risky to humanity, increasing the lethality of some of these viruses in order to build a vaccine for it. It's like, this is out of like science fiction movies or, Mission Impossible movies with Tom Cruise, they're doing these things that potentially are risking humanity in order for research, in order to make more money selling vaccines of something that doesn't exist until they create it.
Yeah. Well, it is kind of you really have to stop and think about what the heck's going on, Jim. There's no question about that. I know that my family, on a personal note, bought into the concept of vaccines. What's the word I'm looking for? Basically keeping isolated from other people. They bought into that 100%. And interestingly enough, nobody in my family did get COVID, and that includes myself. And I was pretty lightly vaccinated at one time throughout the cycle.
Wait, you did get COVID, Al?
I'm sorry?
You did get COVID, right?
I had it for maybe 6 hours, possibly. So I don't consider that to be... Well, actually, I did test positive, but I only had it for about 6 hours. I tested positive on a Friday night, and then about 1 o'clock on Saturday, I tested negative.
Well, yeah, look... There's some strong evidence that the vaccines didn't stop. There's no question.
Exactly,
they did.
That's
not
true.
Stop transmission.
Right.
And it looks like they may, in fact, there's a lot of people that are dying very young, a lot of people around us, people, very large number of people that are dying very young unexpectedly for issues that were not directly COVID related. And media is now beginning to understand that. They are reporting on it, but they're still trying to question whether or not it's because they didn't get vaccinated or they did get vaccinated. It's a long-term process, but we're getting more and more information that shows, in fact, we have to question exactly the policies that were put forward. And we can't allow someone like the World Health Organization or actually bureaucrats to dictate the future of humanity with these types of policy.
Yeah. Well, I do stand corrected. I did get COVID for a very short period of time, but it was official because I did test positive at 9 o'clock on a Friday night, and then at 3:30 the following Saturday afternoon, I very definitely tested negative. So your point's well taken, Jim, and I do stand corrected on that one. I'd like to get some feedback from the folks on our blog. Which segments of the show today did you find to be particularly interesting? I want to ask Irish Tony, CFS, and everybody else. Jimmy, we've got about 30 seconds left. If that, why don't you wrap it up?
Yeah, so let's just there's a lot of politics going on out there. There's a lot of people that are posturing right now for the presidency on the Republican side. There's no answers right now with Joe Biden. If he's going to run again, that puts the Democrats in a dilemma. There's also a tremendous amount of dissatisfaction with society right now in the future of the nation.
Yes,
so
there is.
No, we're going to see in the next few weeks, we're going to see a lot of potential problems coming forward.
Oh, it's going to be the next 6 months, I beg to differ, is going to be fascinating. We'll be back next week, guys.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.